Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, February 10th, 2018. This is episode 1461. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time for computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. We're going to talk tech, you and me. 88, unless you change the channel right now. Okay, now that we got those people out of the way. 8888, ask Leo. Don't change the channel. It's fun. He begged. He pleaded. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You know, we have, you have means. Skype out and like that would call that number and be free. Yeah, we have a couple of visitors from Sweden in the studio. You ever call the show? No? No. You could. That's the point. 8888-ASK-LEO. We talk about, you know, as I said, anything having to do with technology. You can also visit us in a chat room. We got a chat room going on all the time. Those kids in the back of the class, the wiseacres, they're at irc.twit.tv. Hi, Mike B. Hi, Tech Dino. Waikiki Guru, Dale Poco, Dr. Mom, Sarah Jane UK. Scott Wilkinson's already in there, our home theater guy. He's getting ready for his day in the sun, his 15 minutes of fame, about half an hour from now, talking about home theater, Super Bowl, Olympics. Can't watch the Olympics in 4K. Unless you have to have special hardware, which is absurd. You have to have if you're a Comcast customer, Comcast owns NBC, which is broadcasting the Olympics. So if you had that and you had an X1 box, this is their way of promoting their X1 box, which I frankly got rid of as soon as I could. It was a cable company's idea of a streaming on-demand DVR player. In other words, horrible, unreliable, glitchy. but, you know, you got to have it. I guess DirecTV said they're going to be able to do 4K somehow, take over 18 extra channels or something and do that. I'd like to see it in HDR, 4K HDR. I don't know if any of these are high dynamic range. You know, you can get 4K and not HDR. Funny thing is, they're being the videos being made is 4K. My understanding is because it's mostly Korean and I think some Japanese broadcasters doing it. So if you have the right hardware, ask your cable company. It's funny. Chris, I wanted to watch. I wanted to watch the opening ceremonies, which were Friday at 3 a.m. Pacific, 6 a.m. Eastern, and then broadcast later that night, last night. And I wanted to watch them in 4K HDR would be great for that. There's a few things to be great for. Well, actually, all of it. I mean, sports looks, you know, really good in 4K. High dynamic range. Might as well throw in high frame rate while you're at it, right? Yeah, good luck. maybe the Summer Olympics. Maybe in a couple of years we'll catch on to that. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. What happened this week in technology besides all that? Besides the Olympics? Well, boy, you know, Amazon's going to launch a delivery service. This was just a matter of time to compete with FedEx and UPS. According to the Wall Street Journal, it'll be for businesses only initially, so you can use Amazon's delivery service to deliver your stuff. But I think this is just the beginning, right? Because what is the big cost for Amazon? Delivery, especially if you're an Amazon Prime customer. You're not even paying for delivery. So whatever they can do to, you know, improve that. That's just a no-brainer. Oh, I know what happened this week. The HomePod Is that what it's called? Came out. The black thing from the speaker from Apple. I can give you the bottom. I can bottom line this. Got mine yesterday. I've been playing with it. And, of course, compared it to a whole bunch of speakers. Here's the bottom line. Apple's selling it as a speaker because, frankly, it's not, you know, it's not Siri isn't up to, you know, the same standards that Amazon's Echo or the Google Assistant is. It's so even though it is a device with Siri on it, they can't really they're not selling it as like here's instead of Amazon's Echo, buy this. They're selling it as, and I think this is a mistake, a speaker system to that will end all speaker systems. This is, and you can add more of them. They tune it. It says it tunes itself to the room. It's designed with one, you know, maybe, I don't know what that is, 4-inch, 5-inch subwoofer firing up, and then a ring of tweeters that handle the high and mid ranges of the music ringed around the bottom, all the way around. And the idea is, well, it can see where there's walls. It can see where there's obstructions. And as you move around, and I have to say, the one thing it does really well is you can move anywhere around that speaker and the music sounds good from all directions. That's not true of most speakers. Most speakers, you kind of want to place yourself in front of them. In fact, if you've got stereo speakers, left and right, ideally, kind of midway in an equilateral triangle with your speakers, right? You're the apex and they're the left and right, and you kind of want to be, that's the sweet spot. So what I did is I put the HomePod right in the middle of those speakers and I sat there and I flipped back and forth. It wasn't even close, but it shouldn't be. It's a little 6-inch tall single speaker. It's not going to compare to a stereo. Okay. So it's, you know, okay. So let's compare it to, let's apples to apples, so to speak. The Google Max. Yeah, it's a little better than that. This Amazon Echo, a lot better than that. Sonos. Well, it's not as good as a Sonos Play 5, the bigger Sonos speaker, but that's more expensive. But it is better than the Sonos One, which is their Amazon Echo-enabled speaker. I guess the bottom line on this is, if you like music and you want to hear music, don't be such a cheapskate. Don't spend $350. Get a stereo. With two speakers, maybe a subwoofer. That would be nice. Because a little 4-inch woofer on the top, you're not going to get any bass out of that. It's what you would think for a little speaker. It's $350, so it's more expensive than a lot of the competition. And it's very limited because it only plays Apple Music or whatever you can send it from an iPhone. So if you're not already in, deep within, completely immersed within that warm, soapy bath that is Apple. If you're not soaking in that tub and completely under the water and the bubbles, don't get this thing. This is for people who are in the tub with Apple. They are soaking in the warm luxuriance of the Apple ecosystem. If you're outside it, there's no reason to get this. You'd have to subscribe to Apple Music or get an iPhone for it to even play any music. It doesn't have an in jack so you can hook up something to it. No, it's all through AirPlay. It doesn't even have Bluetooth. It just is all through AirPlay, which is an Apple proprietary technology. So that's it. So for those people, if you're in the bathtub, if you're soaking in the warm water and you feel good and your skin is silky and your hair is shiny and you love the world of Apple, then you will love this. This is a great, you will be, because you already bought into the ecosystem. If you didn't, this is far from a compelling product. And I wish people, if you like music, really, if you say you like music, I mean, remember Keith Richards, Rolling Stones, guitar man, the guy, I mean, he grew up listening to a tinny transistor radio, trying to hear Muddy Waters from the pirate radio station offshore, and that was good enough for him. So admittedly, a bad speaker can be okay, but if you like music, spend a little money and get a good speaker system. Get a stereo, for crying out loud, and listen to it as it was meant to be. Don't expect this HomePod to replace your stereo. Not at that size, not for that price. All right, enough said. I wanted to get that out of the way because I know some of you are interested. And there's been an immense amount of hype over this. People have acted like Apple has reinvented sound. And no, they haven't reinvented sound. The physics is physics. A speaker that size is never going to be able to sound as good as a bigger speaker or two speakers, left and right channel. It's just not going to happen. It's not. They haven't overturned the rules of physics. Good. Good. I'm glad to. I'm relieved. That would be disturbing if they had. All right. Taking a little break. We shall be back with more. Your calls, in fact. 8888 Ask Leo. Kim Schaffer's waiting there. She actually looks bored. Make her life exciting. Call her right now. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And look. Look, Kim Schaffer's wearing a black dress. You're just in perfectly black synchronized.
Shirt.
Black shirt, black shoes, black hat. Hello, Kim Schaffer.
Good morning.
Good morning. You have been, I see, I'm looking, I'm seeing.
There are phone calls.
There are calls. Amazing. Let me tell you, I am grateful.
You should be.
I'm always shocked and amazed that people call in.
Hey,
I'm always thrilled.
Everybody's got problems.
Computer problems.
I have problems every day.
Every day. Well, who should I? Who's got the need?
Well, I think you just are going to start out easy spending
someone's money. Oh,
Kevin
yeah.
in Spokane has a pretty old phone, although doesn't sound like it. Sounds really good on the air.
Interesting.
But he's going to need a replacement because he can't get any updates.
Is that an actual HomePod behind you or the simulation that over your left shoulder?
That's fake. I think that's fake.
Burke made one out of a roll of toilet paper with some black fabric around it. But you know, when I got the HomePod yesterday, I compared the two.
Burke's is pretty good.
Very good. The only thing,
John, is that the real one?
The only thing wrong is the weight.
Oh, wow. That thing's heavy.
Yeah. Thanks for dropping it. Well, it did sound good. Yeah, that's it. Isn't it? It's just like a black fabric covered roll of toilet paper, basically.
Yeah.
A little taller.
It's not
and
very
a lot
attractive.
Heavier. Well, I got the black one. I painted it black.
And what does it do? Is this another one of those Alexa things?
Yeah, it's a Siri speaker.
Oh, okay.
Siri speaker. You can play with it. Go ahead. I'll while I'm talking to Kevin in Spokane.
All right.
Thank you, Kim. Hi, Kevin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo. Hey, thank you for having me on the show.
Appreciate it's great that. To have you on.
Yes, thank you. Hey, I found your comments about Google very interesting. You're talking to Bill Handel a few weeks ago.
Yes, on the great KFIR flagship station in Los Angeles.
Yes, and I'm listening now on KFI via iHeartRadio.
Yes.
Traveling through the Columbia Basin in Washington State. Hopefully my signal doesn't get lost, but... I think it's necessary that I update my phone. The Galaxy S3 works very well.
Yeah.
Very reliable, but it doesn't update anymore.
On
4.2 or something.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about the security of that. I got my girlfriend an iPhone. The SE, I bought it at Walmart, $129 for it.
Wow.
And I said to myself, hey, I can afford an iPhone. How about that?
Yeah, that's the affordable iPhone that Apple puts out. It's got the equivalent of an iPhone 5S in its guts. But, you know, even that, when you're buying that, you're saving money. That's a good price. But you're going to run up against the same problem event, you know, in the next year or so, Apple's going to stop updating it.
Not the SE, I hope.
Yeah, the SE.
So that one's only good for a year?
Well, let's say 2 years. Apple has not said, but the problem with that iPhone SE is it's brand new, but the guts are not. So I'm not clear how long, you know, Apple's funny about this. Let's see what Apple says. I'm going to look on their expected life cycle of iOS devices and see if they say anything about the SE. They're funny about it because it's really, for them, it's about the technical capabilities. And that phone really is older in its inside, even though it's brand new. So yeah, I don't mean to scare you. It's going to be fine. But I guess the point I'm making is all phones eventually are abandoned, and sooner than later in most cases. because
I was hoping it would last at least 4 years. I mean, by the way, that kind of it reminded me of a question I had. What really is a limiting factor on phones these days? Is it the updating the OS, or is it the battery life?
It's a couple of things. So Apple says it will support any brand new phone like that SE for 3 years. So you're going to have 3 years.
Okay.
The battery, however, depending on how much you use it, batteries are limited to a certain number of charges and discharges, typically about 500. So typically in about 2 years, maybe three, the battery life starts to decline. And what Apple's done, and people are a little miffed at them, is once the battery can't hold a full charge, there's some risk that the phone will restart spontaneously when it's given tough things to do, when the CPU starts to work really hard. So Apple, they got in a little trouble for this without telling anybody. When they came out with iOS 11, their most recent update, they said, all right, well, if you have an older battery, we're going to slow your phone down so it doesn't tax the battery so you don't get any restarts. And people noticed that when they put iOS 11 on their iPhone 6 or iPhone or older, that it slowed down significantly. So the battery will start to wear out. If in 2 or 3 years, will Apple still be doing that? I don't know. What they've said now in their next version of the operating system, they're going to give you the option to turn that off, but you'll have to agree. Yes, I know my phone might spontaneously burst into flame. It might reboot. I don't know what's going to happen. But if they give you the option to turn that off, at least you'll have the choice of running fast or slow. And then there's the technology. So Apple's chips, every time there's a new phone, they update the chips, they update the GPU and CPU, the capabilities. They add new operating system features like 3D touch, the face recognition, all that stuff. So as time moves on, Apple, whether intentionally or not, it obsoletes its older phones. They just get out of date. And at some point, they won't put the new operating system on there. Now, Android's a little bit different. The reason your Android phone's not updated is Samsung just made the choice not to. But an Android phone has to get the agreement of the manufacturer, the carrier, and then Google has to provide the patch. All three have to approve it. So there's a few more hurdles. So most Android phones are not updated, unfortunately. Only the Google phones and the late model phones from Samsung and LG and Motorola. So you will get out of date faster with an Android phone. And the reason you want the operating system updated, the really most important reason, it's not for new features. In fact, I don't care about that. What you want is the latest monthly Android security patch. So go on your phone, your Galaxy S3, and see if you probably don't even have any security patches. Not having those, that's the real risk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I don't think, in fact, with the Android 4, I don't think they even support those security patches yet. I think you have to get up to Marshmallow. Probably Nougat, which is Android 7, before you even see these monthly security patches. So those are pretty important, Kevin. And the reason, there's nothing wrong with that S3, as you point out. It works fine, right?
Yeah, and I agree. I've tried to go in and update the OS. And it just says
it won't.
That it's updated.
Yeah, it's as up to date as you can get, and you're not getting security patches. So, at this point, the question is, how dangerous is that? And it's not that dangerous as long as you don't install applications from weird sources. In fact, if I were you, I wouldn't install any new applications at all. Just kind of stick with Google and Google's application updates. Do those. One thing Google did do, and you're benefiting from that, is they moved a lot of the core operating system components into the Play Store so that they could update them. And so when you go to the Play Store to get your updated apps, you're often updating kind of key components of the operating system. Keep doing that.
Okay.
And just be careful. The best advice would be to not install any new programs except if they come from companies like Google, Apple, Microsoft, like that.
Yeah, well, and the nice thing about the S3 is it has a replaceable battery, and that's why it lasts so long. But it is time to go. It's time to move on. And
so I was incorrect. The body of that SE is an iPhone 5, but the guts, they put newer guts in. The 6S is the guts of the 6S. So as long as Apple continues to support the 6S processors, and I think because of the SE, you can probably guarantee it'll go 3 years.
Okay, at least three.
Yeah.
That'll probably be enough for her.
Yeah.
Upgraded.
Yeah. I think everybody assumes you're going to get a new phone every 2 years. It's just kind of the benchmark, which is wrong, of course.
Pretty much.
But that's the way, you know, these companies think. They're driven by consumption.
Well, I hope to be able to, because the operating system is important to me and getting those updates. And you were talking about how some are fast, others, the Pixel will update fast, the Apple will update fast.
Yep. Apple.
And I wonder about the Essential and how that ranks in that.
I really like the Essential, and they have kept it up to date, but they're a small company who's been struggling financially. And they do their own operating system, which is very much pure Android, but it's got enough changes that they have to vet any changes. So while they have kept it up to date, I really like the Essential phone. I think it got a bad rap. And for $400, it's a very, very nice phone.
Andy Rubin, he was at Google. He could have stayed there, had a nice gig.
Yeah.
Went out on his own to compete against Google. To compete against Samsung.
No, I think very highly of that, and I bought it, and I loved it. And it probably will be kept up to date, but just, you know, it's always a question mark with the young company that seems to be struggling a little bit.
Well, I'd like to support that, though.
Yes, and, that's why I bought it.
So, and the only question I had was no headphone jack, and you made that leap.
Yeah, it comes with
it's
a...
really no big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah, you know.
Is there a significant difference in audio quality?
Yes, because you have to use Bluetooth, which isn't as good. It's all right. It's good enough for most people.
Uh-huh.
Bluetooth's problems are more about it dropping calls, dropping out, pairing is a pain and all that.
Yeah.
They do come with a Type-C to audio jack, and I think, as I remember, Type-C headphones. So then you'll get the benefits. You just have to use a dongle. And theirs is proprietary to their phone, unfortunately. I don't mean to discourage you from it. It is one of the most beautiful phones ever made. It's a really nice phone.
Yeah, hopefully I can afford it. Otherwise, I'm going back to Walmart.
Look for deals. Look for deals because 400 is the list now, and I've seen many deals over time.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call. Take care.
Thank you, Leo.
Bump de bump. That's the hump de hump. It's time for Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, avsforum.com, where he's the editor-in-chief. And I bet you got more than your share of questions about the Olympics and where you can watch them in 4K. We were talking a little bit about that, Scott. Hey, good morning to you.
Hey, how you doing?
I have
gotten a lot of those questions. In fact, I wrote a piece on AVS Forum. It's at the top of the homepage, so I do hope people will go check it out. It is being broadcast in 4K HDR, high dynamic range, on three different platforms or services. Comcast, you mentioned.
You have to have an X1 box.
You have to have an X1 box. You have to have the Xfinity service.
Is it a special channel or is it – how do they do it? Is it streaming?
No, it's a special channel.
Special channel.
It's not streaming. It's broadcast.
So it's linear.
Very interesting.
Okay.
It's linear.
Okay.
Well, no. Comcast is VOD, video on demand.
Oh, so you can say, I want to see these opening ceremonies in 4K HDR.
You can.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I want to point out that you do need the latest equipment, not because they're forcing you to get the latest equipment, but because this is pushing the edge of technology. Older technology can't carry 4K HDR, so I give them a pass on that. The other two places where you can get 4K HDR are the two satellite services, DirecTV and Dish Network.
They must be taking over extra transponders to do that.
They must.
There's
they
a
must
lot
be.
Of bandwidth that needs.
Yes, absolutely.
And that would not be on demand, obviously. That
Correct.
One you'd have to watch in real
that
time.
That one is linear, right.
Is it NBC's now, feed, or do they have some different feed?
Well, it's actually coming from the Olympic broadcast service, OBS.
NBC, I don't think, is feeding it in 4K.
I don't think so.
So and it is HDR because there was some question in my mind. It didn't always say HDR. So is it Dolby Vision HDR10?
No. Here it is. The most interesting on Comcast and on Dish, it's HDR10.
Okay.
On DirecTV, it's HLG.
Oh.
And unfortunately, I don't have DirecTV. I have Dish. So I'm looking. Actually, the 4K transmission is also, you should know, on a 24-hour delay.
Uh huh.
So, you know, you see what, you know, they're showing you the HDR 4K stuff 24 hours after you can see it in high def, you know, on NBC.
So this was disappointing to me because I have an Apple TV that does 4K. I have Rokus that do 4K. The NBC Olympics app does not stream in 4K HDR. It could.
No streaming. It could. It absolutely could. And I'm disappointed in that, too. There are no streaming sources in the U.S., at least. I don't know about the rest of the world.
Oh, yeah. The rest of the world, of course. It's just us.
But here in the U.S., it's only those three places, Comcast with the X1.
So did you watch it? Did you watch it in 4K HDR?
It the 4K channel just became active at 11 this morning Pacific time.
So you haven't had time.
I'm recording it. I have set it to record. And so after this segment, I'm going to go watch it.
Good. I bet it looks great. I mean, I would expect
it does too. Yeah. We have in the article that I wrote there, it's connected to a thread where people can post comments. And a lot of people have said, yeah, I've started watching it, and oh, man, it looks great. The other interesting thing is that Comcast and DirecTV, the audio is in Dolby Atmos.
Ooh, so you can hear the skis coming from over your head.
That's right.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, Dish Network is only doing 5.1, but that's what I have, so that's what I'm looking at, or will look at. I think, as I understand it, this is the first sort of major broadcast 4K HDR.
Didn't they do the Summer Olympics, some of it in 4K?
They did a little bit of it in,
because I tried to stream it, but 2 years ago, I couldn't really stream it. It was stuttering and, you know, it just was hard to do.
And it may be that that they're not streaming it now because of those problems.
Yeah.
I don't know for
maybe.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe.
I will say this also. You'll be very interested in this. Hulu TV. You know, you can watch the Olympics on a variety of these cord-cutting live TV services like Hulu Live TV, YouTube TV, DirecTV Now. There's several of them. And Hulu has just this week they're not doing 4K streaming, but they are doing 60 frames per second.
Which is really interesting. I'd like to
really
see high frame rate. Yeah.
Yes. Especially for sports.
Yeah.
Really important. Really great for sports. Now, I haven't looked at that yet either. And I will say that we might have talked about this last week. The Super Bowl. If people were streaming from Hulu TV, they missed the last 2 minutes of the game because the Hulu system went down.
Oh Lord.
I know. How frustrating is that? You're watching this pretty impressive game, apparently, and 2 minutes to the end of the game, and the stream cuts out. So they're experiencing technical difficulties, glitches. This is all, you know, pushing the envelope of what's possible.
Well, you know, Hulu's done very well with its subscription service. It's one of the biggest. I think I might have to subscribe just to watch 60 frames per second sporting events.
Yeah. It's available now on a variety of channels. Oddly, a bunch of news channels where it is least important in my opinion.
Those newscasters really are fast, Scott.
Yes, that's true. When they're tossing the topic around, it goes really, really fast.
Of course, 60 frames per second would look good if it's not heavily compressed. But the problem with a lot of this is they compress it so much that you don't really see the quality you would see.
Well, that's true.
Or you'd expect
that's
to
true.
See. Yeah. Ironically, a lot of this is being shot. 90 hours of the Olympics are being shot by OBS and NHK, the Japanese service, in 8K.
Yep.
In 8K. Wow.
And there'll be a little bit of that maybe available in Japan, but nowhere else.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It'll be a little wider spread for the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, the Summer Games. But for now, I'm just excited that we actually have 4K HDR broadcasting of a major world event that a lot of people can see. You know, it's not experimental. Yeah. It's not, only if you have this special, whatever. I mean, you got to have the latest equipment from Dish and DirecTV and Comcast. But if you do, which I do and a lot of people do, you can see it. And I bet you, as soon as we're off the air here, I'm going to go check it out for sure, because I bet you it looks great.
I picked a bad week to bring back my X1 box. That's all right. That's okay. You know, I may have to say I was watching from the NBC Olympics app at 1080, and it looked pretty good on my Apple
TV sure
on
did.
A 4K screen. It wasn't bad. So, yeah, hey,
sure
you know, we only recently got 1080. I mean, we should be happy.
We should cut them some slack, I think. We shall see. We shall see. But, this is pretty good. Oh, and also in that article I'll mention, there's about 50 hours of virtual reality programming.
Yeah, have you tried that yet?
I haven't. No, I haven't. I'm not a big fan of
me
VR.
Neither. Yeah, it's so dopey. I just think it's so dopey.
It just doesn't look very good.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's a gimmick, if you ask me. It's kind of, I think the opening ceremonies would be interesting. You could look around and, you know, but all of these events, well, I guess, you know, if you were, it depends where they put the cameras. If you were on the slopes during the mogul run, if you were right in the middle there on one of the gates or something.
Yes.
During the slalom.
That could be kind of
be neat. You could say, here she comes, there she goes. It'd be kind of interesting. Yeah.
Now, wouldn't that be great if they put like a GoPro or something
in the middle of it?
A ski jumper's helmet?
Mostly what they do with this is they put you in a place where the audience is. And so really there's only stuff going on in front of you anyway. So it's kind of a waste of the 360 unless you want to look at your neighbors. You'll find Scott Wilkinson's article about how to watch the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, at his website, avsforum.com. Of course, he joins us each and every week to talk home theater, high-tech audio and video. At least there's something to watch besides the Super Bowl with your brand new 4K TV that you bought last week on sale, right? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More of your calls coming up. I'd love to be one of the drones in the opening ceremonies.
Oh, man, cool. Was that awesome or what?
Yeah, but it takes some of the fun out of it when you realize it was pre-recorded.
Oh, really? It wasn't actually drones flying in the sky? No.
Well, they were, but they record. The problem, they want to do it live, but they're so finicky.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing at the Super Bowl last year with Lady Gaga. They're so finicky, and if there's any wind and the cold is bad for the batteries, so they just record it ahead of time, and they superimpose it. So the people in the stadium, Katie Couric even said that at the beginning.
She did.
Now,
she
there's
did.
Stuff you're going to see on TV that these people in the stadium aren't seeing, including the drones.
I didn't hear her say it.
She didn't say
the drones.
I found that out. Wired had a good article about the Intel drones.
Well, that's too bad. I was pretty impressed. I mean, I did. She called it augmented reality. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I thought the drones were real. But now,
well, they were real, but they were
recorded
earlier.
Recorded and overlaid.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did we talk about this at CES? They had a thing like that, a drone ballet, if you will.
Yeah.
Over the Bellagio fountain.
That's the Intel drones, yeah.
Yes, yes. And that was pretty cool. Although I will tell you, after the end of that show, it was over the Bellagio fountains, right, which are in a sort of a big shallow pool.
Mm-hmm.
And after the show was over and all the drones kind of flew away, a boat came out on the water to pick up the ones that had failed and crashed into
they
the
fall.
Water.
It's a sad thing to be a drone.
Indeed.
There was a good article about it. If I can find it. Yeah, inside the opening ceremonies, world record drone show. I think they had there were 1,218 drones.
Yeah, I heard 1,200, something like that.
Yeah. But they wanted to do it live. But they just.
It was almost. You know what? I'm not that surprised. I mean, I can understand it because it was so perfect.
Yeah, and just risky because it's cold and they only have 20 minutes anyway.
Yeah,
and battery life, and with the cold, it's reduced. And so apparently, what it's interesting in this article, the supercomputer that controls them decides at the moment which drones to put where, depending on their health.
Really?
So they can, yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty cool. There's nobody, there's no human flying them.
No. I understand.
They're pre-animated. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
But that still.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
Yeah. Pretty neat. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. I did too. Yeah. I thought the opening ceremonies were great.
Yeah, we only got halfway through before falling asleep, but I was watching on the app, so I can watch the rest of it later.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the 4K, to looking at the 4K HDR and comparing it. I recorded the opening ceremonies in HD, and now I'm recording them in 4K, and I'm going to go back and forth. And
it seems like that's the ideal venue for it because there's so much detail. There's so much going on.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
They're also doing several sports, not all of them, but they're doing figure skating, ski jumping, short track, speed skating, and snowboard big air.
That sounds like fun.
So that should be really fun. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to checking that out. But as I said, you know, this is a watershed moment. This is the first, I think, major broadcast of 4K HDR.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty cool in
Can
my
you
opinion.
Stick around for the top of the hour?
You bet. Happy to.
Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Pretty amazing to see those. Scott and I were talking off the air about the Intel drones. That did you see in the opening ceremony last night? The kind of pixels in the sky of a snowboarder and a dove. Those were performed by the Intel Shooting Stars. No, they're not a dance troupe. It's 1,218 flying drones, like the quadcopters you've seen before. They're foam bodies. They're small. They're fairly small. And unfortunately, while they hoped to do it live, they didn't dare. In the end, they decided to do a pre-recorded. They had pre-recorded the show, and they were ready to do it live right before the opening, but they didn't dare. But if you've seen, maybe you saw them on the Super Bowl last year with Lady Gaga's performance of the American flag and stuff. It's pretty cool. It's amazing and they hope Intel. You know, of course, it's great ad for Intel, and they hope to use these in search and rescue and other things. The Intel Shooting Stars sounds like a dance team. The Shooting Stars. Some interesting stats from the NBC broadcast. You know, there's 2,000 people out there for NBC to do this broadcast. I mean, if you wonder why they're trying to maximize the revenue on this, that'll tell you something. They made almost $1 billion in ad sales, so there's that. 2,000 employees in Korea, 2,400 hours of coverage, 1,800 hours of live streaming coverage. That's the most ever for a Winter Olympics. 550 cameras for that OBS feed that's actually feeding more than just NBC. And then NBC added 156 of its own cameras. It's kind of amazing. They shipped 99 sea containers full of gear to Korea for that. 89 Olympics commentators. Holy cow. 29 edit suites. Some of them working almost in real time. You know, they'll get the highlight reel before the next skater comes on the ice. And all of this in freezing temperature. The average temperature in February, 13 degrees Fahrenheit. Freezing. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's get back to the phones. Alan in Marina Del Rey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alan.
Leo.
Alan.
I've been on hold for 2 weeks, man. I've been trying to get this.
You got the record. I'll give you a gold star.
All right. And also, I'm laying in this warm apple bath. That you
it's nice, isn't it? You don't want to get out, really, do you?
I can hardly think, you know. So I don't know if you remember me. I'm the ham radio operator that doesn't like talking to people. You remember me?
Yeah, you and me both, buddy. Yes, I do.
Okay, so anyway, so this hamosphere thing.
Hamosphere? What is that?
It's a website that I was hoping you could take a look at it. I think it simulates the atmospheric conditions on the Earth. And you can buy equipment and antennas and stuff and transmitters. Can you take a look at it?
What's the address?
It's hamosphere.com,
hamosphere.com. Well, you know, I have gas. Gear acquisition syndrome.
And
it's apparently endemic among ham radio operators. We just can't stop.
But no,
the one I'm getting is in French. This can't be it. H-A-M-O?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, no, this is some strange, strange French.
Maybe it's hamsphere.
I don't know. Yeah. They tell you what the... Now, you have the... in fact, we have it on our ham podcast, Ham Nation. We have the weather report, the astronomical weather report every week.
This is a simulation. This is some kind of simulation where I don't understand it completely. That's why I was hoping you could take a look at it.
James DeRuvo's telling me it's hamsphere.com, but I don't see that either. So I don't. Maybe I'm typing it wrong. Maybe we brought the site to its knees. I don't know. Oh, there it is. Ham radio for your PC and smart. Oh, yeah, this is, I think this is what you're talking about. Ham radio for your PC and smartphone.
Yeah.
That's it. And then you're saying they have a, yeah, so this is what we call a software radio. Although, to be honest, almost all radios these days are software radios. I don't see the atmospheric report, though. Where do you see that?
Oh, no, well, it's not that. What did they assign you your own call letters.
Oh,
and you.
So it's not really amateur radio, then.
No, it's really not. It's
internet. But it's fun. It's a simulation. So you can actually, a lot of people do this, use the internet to really be a ham, but you have to get a license from the FCC and get real call letters from the FCC, and then you can do it at your computer. But then at some point, it goes out into the airwaves. People use antennas attached to their computer, the variety of ways to do this. This is just a simulation. Easy-to-use ham radio software transceiver. Talk to ham radio operators all over the world. I'm confused. You know, I'm going to have to ask my Elmers, my good Elmers. That would be, of course, Gordo and Bob Heil, who host our Ham Nation show, what they think of it. I don't know what to say. Virtual ham radio transceiver. You can use it by using a special call sign. I see. So it's software defined radio. Yeah, that's, you know, even hardware. I have a couple of my ham sets. Actually, the hardware is software. They're really just modules. hamsphere.com. Ed in looks like Lyle, Illinois. Hi, Ed. Ed, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had to pick up the phone. Let me take it off speaker.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a problem. I had a program on my computer to convert .dot to PDF. However, somebody without my permission updated it, and the new version of that program is no longer free or available.
Right.
So where can I get a safe .dot to PDF?
Are you what are you on Windows?
On Windows.
Windows, which version?
7.
Okay, Windows 7. So the easiest way to do this is something called Print to PDF. It allows you to print to a virtual printer, which in effect saves an Adobe PDF file. Now, in order to, there's a number of ways to do this. You can, of course, have the Adobe Reader on there, and I think it will do that. Microsoft has a PDF printer. That's probably the best way to do that. Those are both free. So I would check the print to PDF. Let me see if I can find a download for you. Then there are third party companies like Cute PDF, which I like a lot. That one's free as well. In fact, maybe this is the best way to do it. Cute PDF Writer. Cute, as in, oh, you're so cute. We'll do it. There are quite a few of these. But Cute PDF Writer, I think, is very nice. That's free. It basically, once you install it, it establishes a print driver, which you then select. So any document, doesn't have to be a Word document, any document that you can print, you say print, and then choose the printer. But instead of choosing an actual physical printer, you choose print to PDF. And it'll save it as a file. It's, I think, a great way to go. We'll put, actually, PDF Creator does it. There's a ton of programs. We'll put a list in our show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
So let's see. Midnight Rider had asked me, have I heard of a short throw laser projector called the Xiaomi Mi? I have heard of it. I've never seen it or tried it. But it is one of a...
Xiaomi, that's pronounced, Beth.
Xiaomi. Sorry. Xiaomi. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, of course. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So yes, the Xiaomi. It's part of a growing movement toward ultra short throw projectors, or UST, which means that they basically sit very close to the wall, within inches of the wall, and they shoot their light almost straight up at a very steep angle to fill a 100-inch screen or something like that. We saw a number of them at CES. We've seen them for several years now. They have several advantages. One is there's no way for you to walk in front of the light beam, right? Normally a projector is across the room and shooting onto a screen. And if you walk past it, you cast a shadow and it's bright in your eyes and it's really uncomfortable. This is more like a regular TV. It beams up onto the wall, hopefully a real screen, not just a painted wall. And you see the image. It's more like a TV in that way. Mark Henninger, my colleague, the senior editor at AVS Forum, watched the Super Bowl on the Sony VZ1000ES short throw, ultra short throw projector. That thing cost $25,000, but it's pretty darn amazing. Some of these, a lot of ultra short throws are quite a bit less than that. Hisense had a number of them at CES. They're now selling one that includes the screen, the projector, and some modest sound system, speakers in the projector unit, for $10,000. Okay, so that's a lot less than 25, and it includes the screen. One other thing I should mention is that the screen needs to be what's called ambient light rejecting, because in many cases, you're going to want to use an ultra short throw projector with ambient light in the room. For example, watching the Super Bowl. If you're throwing a party, you don't want that to be in the dark. So you need to have a screen that will still show a good picture even with the lights on. And an ambient light rejecting screen will do that. The Hisense model comes with an ambient light rejecting screen. I believe it's a Screen Innovations. It's not the Black Diamond. It's another one of theirs. Anyway, so I haven't heard of the Xiaomi, but I should definitely check it out. Dr. Mom and I have been talking about putting a GoPro on a ski jumper's helmet for VR, actually several GoPros or some other 360 camera. Of course, I didn't mean in competition. I meant, they could get some ski jumper to do it just to record the footage and allow people to see what it's like to be a ski jumper. I'd like that. I think that'd be super cool. And then she said something about Eddie the Eagle and the agony of defeat. I actually have the Eddie the Eagle Ultra HD Blu-ray. I haven't watched it yet. I intend to, but let's see. Who else have I got to talk to here? Tech in San Diego, good to see you. Let's see here. That's right. Friendly Manitoba. Xiaomi makes an Android TV box as well, a streamer. Now they have a short throw projector. That's kind of interesting. Someone in the chat room was talking about, let me see if I can find it. Hey, Sybil, good to see you. Someone in the chat room was talking about, Tachi has a small room and wanted to know about should he get a sound bar or a 5.1 system. And he was looking at a Yamaha Home Theater in a Box. Home Theater in a Box is basically a complete audio system with a receiver of some sort and typically 5.1 speakers with a subwoofer, all in a box. And you basically color-coded wires, and it's relatively easy to set up. I have yet to hear a home theater in a box system that I really, really like. They are always pretty compromised. However, on the other hand, if you've got a small room, you need small speakers, and these home theater in a box systems typically have pretty small speakers. So that's one way to do it. The other way, of course, is a sound bar. And it depends on your budget. So, Tachi, if you would give me your budget in the chat room, I'll be able to advise you a little better. But soundbars have come such a long way, and they really – the good ones sound really, really good. And they even simulate the effect of sound – of surround sound and even immersive sound, you know, with sound overhead as well as around you. So, again, depending on your budget – in a very small room, that might be a better way to go, particularly since, as I say, I've never been that impressed with home theater in a box systems. I actually have never heard a Yamaha, and I generally really like Yamaha audio products. In the past, my favorite home theater in a box was from Onkyo, but even that wasn't that great. So what can I tell you? What can I tell you? Let's see. Beatmaster's asking, are there more 3D capable UHD TVs out there right now? I don't think so. You say it looks like the number is higher than last year. I don't think so. Maybe you know something I don't. But I didn't see any Ultra HD TVs at CES that had 3D. Maybe I missed something, but I just didn't see them. Projectors still have 3D, that I will say. But flat panel TVs? Dr. Mom has an Onkyo home theater in a box, and it's pretty good. See, that was my favorite one of all the ones. That was my favorite one. Lawn Dog Tachi says $500. Okay, so... user 2624 says, let them do an HD in the box. The bars are faked stretched stereo. Yeah, they are. They are. That's true. For $500. Yeah. Okay. So maybe the Yamaha would be good. The latest Onkyo, that as Dr. Mom says, would probably be pretty good. Either way for $500, you should do pretty good. That Yamaha might be good. Like I said, I normally like Yamaha audio products.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. Have a great week.
My pleasure. All right. See you next week.
Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy, Hour 2 of the Tech Guy program. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. 888-827-5536. Right before the break, a caller said, somebody messed with my computer. I can't save PDFs anymore. And I was mentioning print to PDF. The reason I asked him what version of Windows. Windows 10, one of the nice things Microsoft did in Windows 10, it has a built-in Microsoft print to PDF driver. So if you have Windows 10, you don't need any additional software. Unfortunately, he had Windows 7. So there are a number of programs that will add this feature like Cute PDF. Unfortunately, the free ones add it, but they add it by, they advertise a little bit. They say, hey, don't you want to upgrade to the full version from time to time? I don't think they print a watermark on it. I've used print Cute PDF for a long time, the print to PDF feature. I don't think that does anything too oddball. But if you know better, there's a couple of ways you can participate. Either call me, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. You can go in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. I always have that going on in the background, and that's a great place to go if you have questions, want more clarification, irc.twit.tv. You can do that just in a browser. And then finally, there's the website. And I mentioned we're going to put a list in the website of a number of free programs that will add that print-to-PDF capability, the ability to take a document, act as if you're going to print it, but instead of sending it out to a hardware printer, choosing print to PDF, and it just saves it as a portable document file format that anybody can open, and it's really easy to send around and so forth and so on. We'll put a list of those at the website, techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign up. But it's also a good place if you have additional information that you want to add. You don't have to yell at me on the radio. Leo! Shake your fist at your car radio and say, Leo! You don't have to do that. You can just go to the website, techguylabs.com. And there's a, as I said, free, and there's no sign up. You go there. We don't collect your email address or anything. You just read the stuff. But if you do want to post a comment, just to keep spam down, we ask that you log in with your Twitter or Google or Facebook account so that we know who you are. That keeps the spammers at bay. TechGuyLabs.com. Tom is next, Pasadena, California. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm having a audio-visual problem with my newest Samsung TV.
Ah, Scott Wilkins is still here, I think, so he can listen in. Scott, are you still there? He hasn't left yet. What's the question? Well, what's your problem?
Well, the question is, I have a very simplified hookup, which is a DVD to the AV receiver, also the HD network to the receiver, and then via HDMI to the Samsung TV.
Yeah, that's what you get an AV receiver for. It in the simplest form, it's a HDMI switcher.
Exactly. But the thing is, ever since we've acquired this TV, the HDMI just goes away. It just loses signal.
Yeah.
And to acquire it, I gotta go through the remote to get it back. And it just keeps drifting out again. It's happening over and over and over again.
So there are a couple of things to look for. First of all, does the AV receiver switch to a different source? Is that what's happening? Can you see on the receiver what source it's using? You want to look at that because there's this really annoying thing called CEC. CEC, which allows... Some devices do this. Most do. Chromecast does. Apple TV does. Roku does. Android TV. They can say, hey, I'm broadcasting. And they can actually switch the AV receiver without you doing anything to their signal. Uh-huh. And if they're not sending anything, what you'll see on the TV is nothing. And since most of these devices go to sleep, that's in fact what you see. It's very annoying. The reason I mention this is because it happens to me all the time. So that's one thing. And the way to know is to look at what the source is when this happens on your AV receiver. Make sure it's still where you think it is. If it's not, that's what's going on.
But how do I remedy that?
Disable CEC everywhere. It's designed disable CEC. It's called different things on the Samsung. It's called something Link, I think. Every company has its own name, which adds to the ridiculous of all of this, but it is called, its technical name is CEC, and you're going to look for link. The word link sometimes is in there. The idea is it's a convenience that you can pick up your Apple TV remote, press home on it, the receiver will go, oh, you don't want to watch cable anymore, you want to watch your Apple TV, and switch everything over. Samsung calls it, get this, AnyNet Plus. What that has to do with anything, I don't know. AnyNet Plus.
Net Plus.
That's according to Friendly Manitoba in our chat room. So you look at AnyNet Plus, you could disable that. But before you even do that, look on your receiver and see what the source is. So it happens and you go, oh, I just lost the picture. Look on the receiver, see what the source is. The receiver is helpful for other reasons because that screen on the receiver will also tell you what it thinks it's getting from the TV, or rather from the, both from the TV and from the device. See, what is going on with the receiver is something called handshaking. The device can output a variety of different HDMI signals. The TV can understand a variety of HDMI signals. And the AV receiver in between them is supposed to negotiate and say, okay, I'm getting Dolby 5.1. So I'm going to do Dolby 5.1 sound, and I'm going to send you this HDR signal. And the TV says, got it, except I don't do HDR. Okay, let me go back and see what else I can get. And so there's this little negotiation going on. That is another problem with HDMI, which is that sometimes the handshake gets lost, and that might be the other problem you're experiencing, and that's a much bigger problem.
Yeah, I understand that the smart TVs have what they call a smart hub within. And see, this issue never happened with the older TV.
Yeah, it's too smart. your Samsung's too smart. Sometimes, you know what? I beg for this all the time. I just want a dumb monitor.
Yeah.
I don't want any smarts in my TV. I'll handle the smarts from here on out. You know, because that's what a Roku does, an Apple TV, an Android TV. All of them are the smarts. And each has their own different brand of smarts. And you've got an AV receiver to handle that. You don't want the TV to do anything but show the picture coming out of the AV receiver.
Exactly.
But nobody makes that.
Yeah, and at some point, there was a workaround where I could just unplug it from the wall completely. That's what a lot of the Googling guys were telling. You know,
well, look at also
it
your
case. It worked for the longest time.
Right? Yeah, okay, so unplugging it from the wall is forcing, you really shouldn't do that, but that's forcing a renegotiation. It's saying handshake everything again. Make sure your cables are not loose. HDMI, another problem HDMI has.
No, they're not loose. I tried different HDMI.
And you want to make sure you have up-to-date cables with the latest HDMI spec, at least as late a spec as your AV receiver can handle.
Okay.
But I think, so it could be a number of things. If it's HDMI handshake, that's just a pain. Scott, are you still, I don't know if Scott's listening. No, he took his headphones off. I see him. I see him. Chat room, would you tell Scott to put his... He can't hear a thing I'm saying. He's just sitting there. I can watch him. He's left his Skype running, but he's not hearing. I can just speak for him because it's that or it's handshake. And if it's handshake, it's a world of hurt. You're in a world of hurt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll tell you, sometimes we get calls and, you know, you just go, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. It stinks, doesn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls coming up right after this. So, unfortunately, Scott did not hear that call.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, Leo. I had my
headphones off for a moment. So, it's going to be one of those where I kind of have to explain it to you. But what he said was, you know, he'd be watching his TV. Are you still there? No, he's gone.
I am. Yeah,
no,
I'm here.
No, but
I'm here.
He's gone. You're still there. What he said was he would be watching, and all of a sudden his TV would go black. And he tried unplugging the TV and plugging it in again, and that would fix it. And he's got an AV receiver, and so the TV's connected to the receiver, and then the devices are connected to the receiver. I said, first of all, check the receiver, make sure that CEC isn't taking over and switching you to a blank channel, which can happen to me all the time. But then it could be HDMI handshaking. Actually, that's where I'd love to get your input. If you're having something like this happen, is there anything you can do?
Turn CEC off.
That's what I told him. That's if it's a CEC issue.
It is, but that's a troubleshooting step to take. If it's a CEC issue and you turn it off and it doesn't happen, then that's the problem. If it still happens, then that's not the problem. And I think you might be right. I would have asked him how long his HDMI cables are.
Yeah.
If there are any long ones in there, and if so, has he? Make sure he's got certified high-speed HDMI cables. You're right, the handshaking could be an issue. Has this been happening, you know, as long as he's had the system together, or did it only start happening recently? If it was recent, then what has changed in the system? You know, did he add a new piece of equipment or something? If it's been happening all along, then yeah, you need to be looking at the cables probably. Normally cables don't make it so that things just stop. The TV was still on, I guess, right? It just was black.
Yeah, and this is the one clue, which is that unplugging it and plugging it back in fixed it.
Then you're right. That does kind of sound like a
handshake issue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It started happening when he got a new Samsung TV. I think it's AnyNet Plus.
Well, just when he got a new TV.
Yeah.
So it could be, handshaking is probably the issue. I think you're right. I think you were right about that.
Yeah, that's a tough one to fix, right?
It is. Very tough.
Yeah.
Very much. Sorry I wasn't here. I had my headphones off just for a sec. I would have been gone, but I was just...
No, I know. The fact that you were there, I saw you in the camera, but anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you, Scott. I'll let you
know. All right.
All right. Take care.
See you next week.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director. We always keep well musicized. Did you see? I'm sure you did. I hope you did. The amazing Falcon Heavy rocket launch this week. Boy, was that something. If you didn't, there's lots of video. In fact, I think they have SpaceX has its own YouTube channel, probably youtube.com/SpaceX. Is Elon Musk. Here's my takeaway. First of all, wow, very exciting, beautiful, amazing, incredible, the pinnacle of engineering excellence. And then the other thought I had was, what a great marketer Elon Musk is. Elon Musk, who owns Tesla, he made his money with a financial payment service. They sold, I think it was called X.com, and then he sold it to PayPal, became one of the PayPal founders, made a lot of money on PayPal, took almost all of his money and poured it into a couple of things. One, SpaceX, which is a non-governmental commercial space flight company. The other was Tesla, electric cars. And he raised a lot of money. I don't know if either's made much money, but he's raised a lot of money, put his own money in. He has an interesting mission. Well, I want to get into that, but it's pretty cool. He wants to save the world. Let's just put it that way. And he has a couple of plans, including going to Mars. So the Falcon Heavy is a rocket that he will, of course, lease to countries, including the U.S., for launching a variety of projects and things. But they had to test the rocket. It's the biggest rocket since the Saturn V, since the Apollo rocket. It's huge. Big enough, in fact, coincidentally, I think not, to get a manned vehicle to Mars. It's that big. But you have to test it. And they hadn't really tested it in any real way. So they need to put some weight in it. So he decided to put his old Tesla in it. The first Tesla, his Tesla Roadster, in it with a dummy. He called him Starman, dressed in a spacesuit, driving it. And a loop of David Bowie's Space Oddity playing over and over on the car stereo. Of course, no one could hear it because there's a vacuum in space, but, it seems cool. I saw him on the morning TV shows this week saying, he says, it's about one chance in three it'll blow up. maybe one chance in two it'll blow up, which, again, brilliant marketer. Now you got to watch, right? So we were all glued to the TV on Tuesday watching it. It launched perfectly. Everything. In fact, SpaceX does an amazing thing because normally, with NASA and the space shuttle, they would let the booster rockets fall off as it launched the space shuttle and then fall into the sea where they would send a ship to kind of recover them. Elon has his boosters land themselves autonomously. And there were three big boosters on this rocket, 27 engines. Two of the three rockets landed on a landing pad. And I don't know if you saw that, but shortly after the launch, as they came in, it was synchronized and landed themselves flawlessly. The third, unfortunately, lost at sea. But nevertheless, a perfect test of the Falcon Heavy. And a perfect ad, as it turned out, for Tesla, because after the payload got in orbit, again, it's just a test, a dummy payload. They needed some weight. He said we could put cement bricks in, but I thought I'll put my car in instead. Well, now I know why. He had cameras all around it. The capsule's fairings opened up so that it was out in space, and you could see for a few hours after the launch, the Starman, the Tesla, orbiting the Earth's in the background, the big blue marble we all live in, rising and setting in the background with this beautiful display. Very, very spectacular. And, I have to say, to his credit, yeah, it's a Tesla. He could have put, there's a big screen on it, he could have put a Tesla logo there. He didn't. He just put the words "Don't Panic" in there, which come from a a much favored novel for geeks called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. There it was on the steering wheel, a subtle T, the Tesla logo. But what a great ad for Tesla. pretty beautiful, pretty nice. And so that was, to me, that was the most exciting event of this past week. Really something to watch. And, of course, I say that as a guy who grew up as a kid watching us, you know, go to the moon. And so it's nice to see us, you know, and watch every Challenger, every shuttle launch, including the Challenger, sad launch. But it's nice to see us go back into space. By the way, the Starman is now on his way to the asteroid belt and then on into the galaxy. If he's not pulverized by space particles, maybe some in some distant future, some alien archaeologist will find him and wonder, and maybe even learn to love David Bowie as we do. Ivan, Long Beach, you're next.
Yes, how are you doing?
Hi, Ivan.
Yeah, I'm just, I can't help but make a comment about SpaceX. Just, and I'll get back to my other question.
Okay.
But it's a third comment. It's amazing what one man can do in a private industry that it took 60 years for NASA to not do.
Well, don't forget that he was on a NASA launch pad. That without all of the efforts that we put in at NASA, this would not exist. A lot of the engineering was done by NASA, so he stands on the shoulders of giants. He is not operating in a vacuum by any means.
Yeah, and about one tenth the money, by the way. Anyhow, PDF files. That happened to me a while back, about 6 months ago, where I upgraded that PDF, and it turned out they wanted to sell me the new version.
Yeah.
Really, if you look at the menus closely, all the choices, it's still there. Everything is still there. It's just they make it hard to find it. It still works like it always did. The graphics is kind of juvenile compared to the original Adobe graphics when you open up the Adobe PDFs. But it's there. You just have to look a little harder.
So you're using Adobe's Reader or Adobe Acrobat?
Acrobat.
That's a paid version. I don't know if that's what he was using or not. And as I said, it's unnecessary. Once you get to Windows 10, you can print directly to PDF. Acrobat's very expensive. Most people don't buy Acrobat. They buy the Reader. But as you say, if you want to create PDFs, that's a power tool. I think print to PDF in Windows 10 is more than enough. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Tech Guy listeners, if you wouldn't mind doing me a big favor, we are doing our annual TWIT survey. Once a year, we reach out to our audience just to get to know a little bit more about you for two reasons. One, it helps us make sure our programming fits your needs and the way we deliver it, etc. But also for purposes of advertising, advertisers like to know a little bit about you. And I don't want to tell them anything about you individually, so we never collect information. But we will once a year survey you so we can say things like, well, 50% female, stuff like that. It's easy. It just takes a few minutes and very short this year. And you can do it at twit.tv/survey. You could skip any questions you don't want to answer. I promise your email and information is completely private. We will not share it with anybody, just the total results of the survey in aggregate. That's twit.tv/survey. Thank you for doing that. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett. Our traveling guy joins us every week to talk about traveling better with technology. Hey, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
You're back home, but you were in Florida before that.
I was in South Florida visiting my dad, last minute trip, and I'm back.
Well, wow. You treat a plane ride like the rest of us treat a car trip to the mall. I mean, it's just every day for you.
Well, it used to be the opposite. You know, I used to be afraid to fly. I didn't get on a plane for years, and then I got over it. And now, now I realize it's much safer to fly than it is to drive.
It is.
And if you can do some tricks of the trade, you can make it a lot more pleasurable. You know, try not to check a bag. That makes a big difference. get TSA PreCheck or Global Entry, things like that, so you can just speed through security and you don't have to worry with that. Get access to clubs, get certain credit cards so you can get into all the clubs, club lounges, and you just time it right and you just roll right up.
Nice.
And stick with one airline and get upgraded. Or these days you can buy actually a first class ticket for a lot cheaper than you used to be able to. And actually that's what I did this week because I needed to go to Florida last minute and I was looking at the prices. And I live in L.A., and my dad's in Delray Beach, which is between West Palm and Fort Lauderdale. And I like to take a nonstop to Miami because American has nonstops to there. But the prices are insane, especially first class. So $1,700. Coach was
especially in
like
winter.
$500.
Everybody wants to go in the winter, right?
Yeah, but and then to Fort Lauderdale or Palm Beach, the closest airport to him is Palm Beach. And Palm Beach can be sometimes expensive, but if you make a connection – you know, a first class ticket was $499 one way, but a coach ticket was $379. So I was like, for $120 more, I'm splurging. So I don't have to deal with the whole upgrade.
Any normal person is supposed to figure this out.
Well, and you just had to keep. That's why I just kept searching. I just kept trying different airports.
Now you know that Google, the travel at Google now is more elaborate, and you can now finally buy tickets through them. So, do you use Google's travel service?
I use Google Flights price it out, but then I will book directly through the airline. Actually, on
is
Google
that
Flights
to do that.
Well, it gives you the option. So let's say, for example, I'd put in that L.A. to Palm Beach. And it just says book on American, you know, $499. You click it and it takes you right to the American website already loaded up and you just got to put your info in.
Oh. See, now the new Google Flights, I think you could buy within Google Flights. They've completely redesigned it.
I just started looking at this week. I don't love it so far.
Okay.
So I like the old one. And that's what I've been using.
They're competing with Kayak and Orbitz and Expedia and all these services, right? You even have one on your site.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And the trick is to find the cheapest deal. You got to look around and try.
So there's
different
no one spot.
Websites.
You can't just say, oh, there's, this is going to give me the best deal.
There's really not, because a lot of these third parties, they'll put whatever deal they have with the airline in the background up at the top.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, oh, that's the cheapest deal. But
right.
It's really not. So and again, you check alternate airports on for where you live and where you're going. Look at making a connection instead of nonstop. And, you know, when I was making my connections, you know, I could have flown through Charlotte for a lot cheaper, but I don't like flying through Charlotte because American flies old U.S. Airways planes and they don't have power on a lot of them. So I put in Dallas because also the weather is usually better. But Tuesday night I was in Dallas and they said, you know, we might not take off because it's freezing rain. It was 32 degrees and freezing rain.
What?
And we had a de-ice. First time I ever had a de-ice in Dallas.
Funny. Wow. You'd think, Toronto, if they didn't take off because it was freezing, they would never take off.
Right.
I guess Dallas, they're just not used
Dallas
to it.
Huh? Like, we can't take off in freezing rain.
Wow. Huh. Okay. I want the pilot to be safe. Do whatever you need to do, dude.
Yes. Yeah. And then I was landing at midnight, and I couldn't just show up at my dad's senior center at midnight. So I booked a hotel room last minute using the Hotel Tonight app, and I found the Holiday Inn Express for like $179. And when I checked in, the guy's like, well, you know what? You should also try our app, the IHG app, because if you have elite status with them, the prices are usually cheaper.
You must have a whole page on your iPhone just dedicated to apps to do this.
On my phone, I have different folders. I have one for hotel, air, and I have every different app.
And you check everything before you decide.
No, I don't. I should. I did not on the IHG one.
Yeah.
But now I will if I decide to stay there again, although – I made a mistake when I remembered when I check in. Usually when I check into a hotel, I always say, please get me a room that does not have a connecting room door. And sometimes I forget.
Yeah.
This time I remember. He's like, well, you know what? I checked in at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
He's like,
you get what you get.
You get what you get. But always ask for a room without a connecting room door. Unless you're
Why? Are you afraid the neighbors will come visit?
No, it's. Well, this hotel particularly had really thin walls.
You can
so it
hear
didn't matter
right through the door,
but you can hear everything in the room next door. And you know, always I've had that happen to me. And
you don't even want it if it's your family, let alone strangers.
Yeah, and then people are coughing. I mean, I've had it happen twice this week. Last week I was at the Langham, a 5-star hotel, and I had a connecting room door, and the guy was coughing. And it sounded like he was coughing in my room.
Can you ask to be on a floor where there aren't any people?
That would be nice. Unless you're the president, maybe.
I'd like a floor to myself. Do you mind?
Yes.
Do you have a site for us today?
I I do. So actually, I just tweeted it, and I'll put it in the show notes because everybody is worried about getting the flu. And that was one of the things I was worried about. And of course, I get on the plane, and the person in front of me is coughing and not covering her mouth. And I was like, are you kidding me? And so I gave her a nasty look, and I was just about to hand her a mask. And then a seat opened up across the way, and I asked the flight attendant if I could move. But anyway, this map is by the CDC.
You carry extra masks? You carry extra masks with you?
Yeah, I did. I carry two masks, one for me and one for the person who's not covering their mouth.
One for the person coughing next to you. That's smart. So, I had a flight to France, an overseas flight next to a guy coughing. I thought, this is not going to end well.
Oh, I had a flight a couple of years ago to Australia where the lady was just blowing her nose, not covering her mouth, throwing the dirty Kleenexes in the aisle.
What?
And I was like,
where'd she
grow up? So I told the flight attendant, and she actually handed her a mask.
Good.
So that's where I really started learning bringing a mask, because I'll hand it to the flight attendant, and then they'll give it to the person. So I avoid any
contact. Oh, that's nice. Let her be the bad guy. This is the CDC map that shows which states have the worst flu outbreaks. You can actually find it at Johnny's site, johnnyjet.com.
But there's also some tips in there. So, and actually in the link I sent you, it has some tips. It actually really wasn't from the CDC that had these tips. But it turns out the dirtiest place, by the way, right now flying is the check-in screen when you're at the airport.
Because everybody's touching it.
Everyone's touching it.
Ooh.
And so an independent insurance company did a test and had like 253,000 CFUs, colony-forming units, when an average toilet seat has 172.
Yikes.
So that's insane. And then the second dirtiest place is on the airport bench.
Check into the flight on the toilet seat. The bench armrest at a gate. Oh, yeah, because, yeah.
I never even thought about that. And of course it should be. But
So do you just carry Purell with you and just sanitize after you use these things?
I do. I carry the little wipes, the individual packets. And so I get on the plane, I wipe it down, and actually I sat next to this guy who was a big-time freaking flyer. He looked like Frank Sinatra, actually. He started doing it first, and then I did it. He goes, hey, you're just like me. I go, yeah. I go, you have to in this day and age, especially right now with the flu season being so bad.
What are all these people doing on my plane? Have some Purell. All right.
Yeah.
I like
it. But you got to wash your hands often, and you got to make a note not to touch, a mental note not to touch your face with your
finger. That's the thing. I tried. Don't touch your face ever. Never, ever. Hands,
your eyes,
must stay
nose, your
below
mouth,
the shoulders at all times.
Yep. And
buttons, I hear, are pretty dirty too.
Yeah.
Basically, I touch everything and then put my fingers in my mouth because I want to immunize myself against this stuff.
Well, I used to be like that. And Jack gets on the plane and he's biting the seat, kicking the window. And I'm like, oh my gosh,
Johnny,
this is not good. So that's why he stopped flying for the year season.
Yeah. Save your app for next week. Don't get the flu. Be back next week. JohnnyJet.com. That's the place to go if you want to see these tips and many, many more. And find the best flights. And of course, follow him on Twitter where he's got lots of great tips. And Instagram too for the pictures. Thank you, Johnny. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
So I
didn't get to my app, or I had a couple other things I was going to mention, but so maybe
right.
I can bring it up.
That
week.
Means you don't have to write something for next week.
It, but I'll take them. I'll take them down.
You don't have to write it for next week. That's all. Just put.
I hope that was okay.
It was great. Dr. Mom has a recommendation for. Masks to wear. Is there a difference between masks? Are some better than others? Does it matter? I don't like wearing masks. Although I saw it when I'm watching the Olympics, everybody, half the audience is wearing a mask.
Well, in Asia,
that's common custom, right?
It's culture. Yeah. I mean, and if you're sick, they wear a mask.
By the way, that's right. It's the person who's sick that wears the mask.
But not always in Asia. Sometimes, they're also worried about, getting it. But if they are sick, they put a mask on. And the one time a year ago, I was flying back from D.C. I had to fly back, and I was sick. I put the mask on the whole time. People look at you like you're crazy, but what?
You're saving them. You're doing
it for their
them.
Benefit,
I'm
not
doing
mine.
It for you.
Yeah.
Yes. Doing it for you, my friend.
I don't know why Americans aren't more open to that.
If the public... Here's Enterprise 2574 says, I've worked in the airline industry for 20 years. If the public only knew all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes at an airport, they would be shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Yeah,
shocked.
I bet.
Oh, yeah. Leo Laporte. That's the flu. The tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Johnny was traveling with a ghost of Frank Sinatra on his last flight. Back to the phones we go. Mike in Bakersfield. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Hey, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I am trying to do whole home audio with the Amazon Alexa.
Okay.
I have them, actually, it's the, I'm sorry, the Echo Dot is the actual device that I'm using.
Yeah, the Dot, I do that. I have a Dot in almost every room, but I, of course, the Dot speaker is very tinny, so I hook it up to powered speakers.
Yeah, and that's my problem is that when I'm connecting, so I have it connected to my Yamaha receiver in the front room.
Yep.
And I have it connected to my computer speakers through Bluetooth in my bedroom.
Perfect.
But what's happening is when I go to try to play a playlist through there, it automatically disconnects and plays through the device itself.
Yeah. So you have to set up, first of all, you have to set up the rooms in the Echo app. And I presume you've done that much anyway.
Yeah, I have it set up basically everywhere is what I've done.
Yeah. So you can have, and I have an everywhere, but then I have one for the bedroom that includes speakers in the bathroom and the closet and, you know, in the bedroom. I have one for the living area that includes the kitchen, the living room, and the den. So you create rooms, and then the trick is to use the right command, and you the problem is, of course, unless you're specific, it will play it on the Dot, which you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to say, first of all, set up the you're not using Sonos. I take it back. I was thinking you were using Sonos. You're using their own capability. All right. Yeah. So let me see. I was gonna give you the. So you have to then say things like, "Play music, Echo. Play music in the den, or in the living area, whatever it is." And you're doing that, and it's not doing it.
Yeah. So basically, what I can do is I can put the on-screen display from my Yamaha receiver on, and I can see that it's connected to the Bluetooth.
Tricky because the receiver is going to jump off of that whenever it can, right? It's easier with the computer speakers because they just stay on whatever's plugged into them.
Yeah, but I mean, I have it set up to my Harmony, so whenever I go to do that, you know, I'll go to that activity, and that way, you know, I can hear the Alexa through there.
Do you have the Echo connected to the Yamaha with a cable?
No, and see, I did that where I connect it to it in the bedroom, and it'll play over the auxiliary cable.
Right.
But I want to be able to do it through the Bluetooth, and like I said, when I look at the on-screen display on the receiver, it'll say connected, and as soon as, and I can say, you know, hey, tell me a joke, and it'll tell me a joke, and it'll play through the receiver speakers. But as soon as I ask it to play a playlist on Spotify,
oh, that's interesting.
I can watch it disconnect, and then it'll start playing through the device.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that was, and I did it on Spotify at first. I'm thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe they do that to get you to go through Amazon Music. So I logged into my Amazon Music.
Same thing happens. Yeah.
Same thing happened, yeah.
It sounds like, for some reason, the Dot is deciding not to use Bluetooth for the music.
I go on the Alexa app, and it'll say that it's connected still. You know, I'll look at it, and you'll have the Bluetooth symbol lit up next to the device, next to the speaker that it's paired to. And it just doesn't play through it. So I didn't know if there was some trick to it or...
Yeah, no. I hate Bluetooth. Is there some reason that you... I get it. VegOut says, because of the delay that Bluetooth introduces, multi-speaker audio is not supported on the Amazon Echo with Bluetooth.
Oh, okay.
And that makes sense because what you'd hear is almost an echo, right? You would hear the stereo, the Yamaha, playing out a half second later from any other speaker, and it would be echoey.
Okay, it has to be hardwired in order to do that then.
Well, that's what somebody's saying. Now, Dr. Mom says she has a system. She streams from her Echo to her speakers all the time using Bluetooth. Spotify plays fine. So, you know, of course, I'm always going to suspect Bluetooth because Bluetooth is such a nightmare. But now I'm wondering a little bit what's going on. VegOut might be right. It might be that it says, nah, you don't want to do this. But it's not multi-room when you're doing that. You're just playing through the Yamaha, right? You're not trying to do multi-room.
Well, I can play it through the Yamaha just fine by itself. But when I just tried to do this today.
Ah, it's the multi. So it is the multi-room that doesn't work.
I believe so. I believe so.
I bet you that's exactly why. Because the echo it would introduce.
Hardwiring it.
Yeah, just hardwire it.
Yeah, I just didn't want to move it out of the kitchen because I use it for timers and things like
I
that.
I understand.
I'd rather not have to scream across the room.
Yeah. You know, there's a good solution for this. Buy more Echoes.
I'm debating on whether to do that or
I have it's
home at this point, so.
Well, and then there's Apple with its HomePod now, and it's just it's gotten to be very competitive. For now, at least, Echo is an easy winner, even over the Google Assistant, I think. But in time, Google may start to catch up because they have such superior, AI capabilities, artificial intelligence capabilities.
I really love to do Google because of the search capability.
Exactly.
You ask a question to the
Echo,
and it's like, I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Right. Echo's not really good for information. Great for music. Mm-hmm. Great for home automation. Not so good for information. So you should do what I do, which is have both.
Yeah. I might as well. My work gave me an iPhone. I've been Android since the beginning, and so now I carry two phones. I'm on multi-platform, so why not, huh?
Tom, we're going to put a link to a Tom's Hardware review of multi-room music setup in Dr. Mom sent it along to us from Tom's Guide, and I'll put it in there, and it may have some suggestions that might help you.
Yeah, I think that's the one that actually gave me the idea to do this.
So. Yeah, okay, so you've read it, yeah. You know, they're only $30 for more dots. This is how they get you. I have Echoes everywhere now. So yeah. People think, they all look like room fresheners. People think I have some sort of odoriferous house because it looks like I got room fresheners everywhere. All these little devices. No, it's just...
What are you trying to match?
What are you hiding, Leo? I have a problem, personal problem. I think maybe just get another dot. They're only $30.
Yeah, good.
And more speakers. Pretty soon, I'm telling you, every room in the house. Then the worst thing happens. You say Echo, or the other word, and they all light up and go, yeah, yeah, yeah. Supposedly, Amazon says only the one closest to you will do anything. 888 Ask Leo. If you've got a better suggestion, I'd like to hear it. 888-827-5536. Walter in Georgia. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Walter.
Hey, Leo. Appreciate you taking my call. I've been using Keeper Vault for my passwords.
Uh-huh.
And I heard you recommend LastPass.
Keeper's good, too, though. Keeper's free. It's not as powerful, but it's a good choice.
Well, and when I signed up for LastPass, I signed up, got a master password, profile, and everything, but I can't find out where and how to load my password so that they automatically put them in.
So, you mean as you're on a website and you create a password and then LastPass, you want it to get into LastPass? So the key on this is: Are you on a Windows or a Mac machine?
Windows.
Okay, actually, it doesn't really matter. The key on this is you want to install the LastPass extension for the browser that you're using. So if you're an Edge or Firefox or Chrome, the browser has to have the LastPass extension. And what I always do is have LastPass generate the password. And then when you fill it in, LastPass should pop up a little thing that says, oh, you just added a new site. Do you want me to add that site to your vault? Even if you change the password, which is probably a good idea if you'd been using the same password over and over again, it might be time to go and change all the passwords, something strong, and store it in LastPass. It should say, I see the password has changed. Would you like me to change it? So it should do that automatically. But to do that, you do have to install LastPass in all your browsers. I asked about the Mac because there is a problem on the Mac, which is very weird. And I will talk about that when we come back from news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That could be Londog. Londog's saying sometimes when you open Google Chrome or Internet Explorer or the Edge browser, the LastPass will pop up in the corner. It looks kind of odd, and you might think it's an ad, but that's how you turn on the extension. On the Mac, there is an actual bug in LastPass. I don't know if they've even fixed this yet, where the binary extension does not load. And so some of the features are missing on the Mac, and there's a fix for it, but it requires modifying a text plist file in the library folder. It is kind of non-trivial. Let me see if I should. I wonder if I should show you how to do this. So, this, for a long time with LastPass, I would, let's say, go to a site, let's say 23andMe. And now you see over on the LastPass icon, there's a little one there. And if I tap it, shows matching sites. For a long time, I wouldn't get this copy password thing. I would just get, like, edit a couple of things. It was like it wasn't doing all the things. There were other side effects that the binary is needed to attach image files, for instance, in the secure note field, things like that. So, for a long time, I just thought, oh, well, LastPass isn't really working. And then I finally found out there's a fix for it, which is very weird. So you have to install the LastPass binary installer. And then, this is so weird. Go into the Finder, go, hold down the Option key, right, so that you can go to your local library. This is the library for your account. Now, if you go into Application Support, LastPass, let's turn this into that. If you go to Application Support, LastPass, you'll see the LastPass helper if you've installed that. But that does not get run automatically because of a bug in the plist file. It doesn't do the right thing. So what you then have to do to fix this is go to Library and then Launch Agents, Library Launch Agents, and you'll see a plist file, com.lastpass, okay? I'm going to edit it and BB edit it. Any text editor can edit this. Let's make this bigger. Cancel. Oh, you have to make it writable. That's right. You can do that in a good editor. How do I make it bigger? Text. How do you make the text bigger in this program? Text. I want it to be big. Big. Let's just do it this way. Let's go to 24. Can you read that? Make it even bigger. There you go. All right. And there's a line in here that's the launch line. Normally, if you go to yours, it won't say your, this, users, in my case, is users Leo library. It'll just say something like some dummy string like home directory or something. That's an error. That's a bug in the installer. You have to actually go in, modify this plist to point to the Application Support LastPass Helper app, or it won't launch. Once you do that, save it. And again, you do have to be root to save it. That means you're going to have to enter the password and all that. I'm going to do it now because I've already fixed it. And then LastPass will work properly. What a weird bug. It's been there for multiple versions. Crazy. There's your freebie of the week. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, augmented reality, 8888-ASK, Leo, anything with a chip in it. Let's talk high tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number again, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can still reach us. Just use Skype out or something like that, and you can call 888-827-5536. Back to the phones, and Jim in Cameron, Wisconsin. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
What can I do for you, sir?
I'm trying to resurrect my XPS 7 Dell, 27 Dell computer here, and it won't boot. If you let it go through the boot process, it says an operating system was not found. Connecting any drives that don't
always operating. Always a scary message.
So I can go to I hit Control I and I go into the options here
you mean Windows key I, which does the updates? You mean?
No, it says Control I. Part of the boot, you can stop.
Oh, during boot, yeah. Well, nothing's going to happen. It's your hard drive.
Well, I don't mind doing that, but I've got two hard drives. I mean, it's got the.
Do you have Windows on both of them?
No, the.
So it can't see the C drive. The boot drive is the one it needs.
That's a SSD, and I'm thinking it's trying to boot from the spinning hard drive. And I'm thinking on this
selection
I've
but was it
change it to make it boot from the other drive?
Yeah, you probably can. Did you? It's booted before, I take it, unless it's brand new.
No, it's old, and I'm retiring. I've replaced it, but I'm trying to save it and reinstall Windows and stuff. But it won't
so
recognize.
In the past, it did boot appropriately. Just for some reason, all of a sudden, it stopped. Well, it could be a couple of things. I mean, it really could be that something went wrong with Windows on that SSD. Or it could be it's trying to start from the wrong drive. Do you know that it's trying to start from the wrong drive? Is it telling you it's trying to start from the other drive?
Well, on this screen, it shows, create RAID volume, delete RAID volume, all this stuff. But it's got a star that says accelerated disk slash volume. And that's then the associated star with that is by the spinning drive. Does that mean that that's the one it's trying to boot from?
No.
Star B
no. You, do you have... So... Intel makes and Dell sells a spinning drive that has a little bit of augmentation from an SSD. How big is that SSD? Was it a standalone SSD like your C drive?
Well, it was made to be a boot. It made to be a boot. It's a 30. It says 29.8 here, but I think it's a.
No.
A 32-bit. 32
gigs. Yeah, that's Intel speed up drive. That is not intended to be a boot drive, I don't believe.
I think that's what Windows is on, is right?
No. So it may not be. Did you modify it from the way it came from the factory?
No, it came from the factory. But I thought it said it had that for speed of boot.
Yeah, but it's not.
Your information was on the.
Yeah, so the way these things happen, normally. You would put a 128 gig or better SSD in as the C drive, and that's where Windows would live. And then if you had a spinning drive, you put that in as the D drive. But I'm going to bet, I don't know, but I'm going to bet you only see one drive, a C drive. And that's because you have what's called a hybrid drive. When it's a small drive like that, it's almost certain that what you have is one of Intel's hybrid drives. And the idea, Apple does this too, they call it fusion. It's a terrible idea. But it was this happened a while ago, when SSDs were very expensive, this was a bridge idea. Well, what if we took a relatively inexpensive small SSD and used it to speed up things? And the way this works, both Apple and Intel do roughly the same thing. They watch what you're doing and they move files that you access a lot, mostly read, because that's where SSDs get their big speed bump. The files you read a lot, they put on the SSD, and this is all managed completely without your intervention. That's why I say if it's that kind of hybrid drive, it'll appear you only have one drive. It won't appear you have two drives unless you do something like you're doing, which is examining the physical layer. But in the normal boot, after you boot up, you should see one drive. My PC, one drive. And so I wouldn't assume that you have two drives in your machine. That's Intel's rapid start. That's all designed to speed up, to make the normal spinning drive, the large drive, look faster. It doesn't work very well. It's a terrible solution. And you're running into one of the real problems with that solution, which is if anything goes wrong with either drive, it's like one of those RAID arrays where you've got two drives combined to look like one. You can have a non-booting drive, which is what you've got. So, it is not that – I see part of the confusion. I hope you didn't mess around with the setup on this. It's not that you have a C and D drive. You have one drive, a C drive, that consists of a spinning drive and an SSD. That SSD, that small SSD, is too small to put Windows on for real. The idea is we'll just put the stuff we need all the time. Most of it will be Windows, by the way, because that's what you mostly read all the time. So there are a couple of things you could do about this. If there's data that you want to recover on that drive, this gets tricky. Because the normal thing to do would just be to get the Dell recovery disks. You made them, right? And reinstall them. The Dell software already knows about these fast start technology. It'll automatically format and set up the drives properly. Anything else you do could conceivably separate those two drives, the C and D drive. And then you've got a mess. Then you pretty much, I don't know how you might be able to recover data on the D drive, the second drive. but you don't want to mess with this setup. It's like it's almost like a RAID array. That's why it's showing up in that control I set up. It's almost like a RAID array, but it's not. So, what recovery is tricky with this? I just wish they had. I never thought of this, and they don't do it anymore, as far as I know, because SSDs have gotten less expensive. The best way to put an SSD in a computer is to have a large-ish SSD, at least 128 gigabytes, maybe larger, 256 or more. If that's not enough, it's enough for Windows and all your apps. But if you need more for data, then you have a secondary slower drive, a spinning drive. That's a great solution. That's not what this is. This is two drives combined together to act as one faster drive. And it causes all sorts of problems. So Intel does have Rapid Start software. Can't boot into Windows, though, so that's troubling. A recovery disk might help. It's a mess, isn't it? Recovery disk, if you can get Intel's RST software on there, might help. Best, at this point, unless there's data that you want to save on there, the best thing you could do, actually what I would really do, is take that drive out of there, that hybrid drive out of there, and put a nice SSD in there and just use it normally. You're going to need to, at some point, you could probably want to do that anyway, if you want to do that. Now, if there's stuff on there that you said it's an old computer that you want to keep, then this gets a little bit more complicated. You probably want to get a tech guy in on this, and he'll have the right software. The truth is, I don't like these drives, and I'm not really sure what you'd do to fix them at this point. It's kind of messed up. Sorry. We'll take a break. I'm going to do some research on the Rapid Start drives from Intel, see what we can do to recover them. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm reading up on all of this crazy stuff with this Intel Rapid Start software, whose name, by the way, they haven't even decided on. They've called it the Rapid Storage Manager. There's probably a Rapid Response Technology. They can't decide what to call it. So, which doesn't help if you're trying to search for solutions. I will put a link to an article in the HP forums about how to, kind of start from scratch to set up the Intel Rapid Storage Technology drive caching from scratch. It's probably the case that if you have your recovery partition intact, if you can do a recovery or you have recovery disks for your laptop, your Dell 27 laptop, if you have the recovery, or is it a desktop? I guess it's a desktop, right? If you have the recovery disks for it, they should be smart enough to know that you've got one of these Rapid Start drives in there, and I would presume recover it properly. The big issue is going to be if there's data you want to save on there. If there is, this is what we in the business call non-trivial. In other words, really hard. You need an expert. Rick in Torrance, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. And my situation is I switched over to Google Fi, who I was happy with, but timing-wise, it wasn't too good because right after I switched, all the other companies started offering either unlimited or, like, 5 gigabytes for a certain amount and this and that.
Yeah.
And Google is sticking with $10 a gig, which brings them back to the negative again.
Well,
if you use 14 gigs, anything after that is free.
Right.
But by the time you calculate the price out, 14 gigs, that's 140 plus the cost of the phones. You're right up there with
another
company that's unlimited.
I think with their guarantee, you don't go over $80, I think. But I'll have to check. I'm a Fi subscriber as well. And nevertheless, you're right. They're not. Fi wasn't designed necessarily to be competitive, just transparent.
Yeah. If you only use a gig or two, it's a great service.
Right.
But, unfortunately, the others in my family are using a lot.
Oh, yeah, if you're all on the same plan.
Stay there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the idea with Fi, the bill protection, so the whole idea with Fi is you pay $20 per line, just for the basic, you know, service, phone and texting, unlimited texting. And then you pay $10 a gigabyte, and that was the old way of doing it. Then they added this new bill protection. So after 6 gigabytes, I don't know where 14 came from. Maybe it's something. After 15 gigabytes, you're slowed down. Maybe that's where you got that number. After 6 gigabytes, they turn on the data protection. You don't go over an $80 bill.
Now, I've got one of the multi-plans, though, where you've got
phones.
And actually, your first phone is 20. Any phone after that is 15, which
right.
is good.
That's good.
But they group the whole group into 14 gigs.
And then it's 14 and after 14. But 140 for multiple phones isn't bad. So you're saying you can get a better deal from somebody
140,
else?
Yeah. Yeah, 140. And then...
Not per phone, though.
The 65 for the phones brings you to 205, and for the equivalent, $200 a month, you can go to Verizon and get unlimited.
For a family plan, for what do you have, four lines, it sounds like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
And, you know, I was real happy with Verizon, I mean, with Google Fi, just until lately. I've started having, like, if I send texts, they don't go through. I'm not having as good a service, and I'm thinking, you know what, I might go back to Verizon.
The only reason that Fi might be better than Verizon is if you travel internationally a lot.
Uh-huh.
Do you?
Which I don't.
Okay.
No.
So then it sounds like if you're getting a better deal from Verizon, and of course you're not going to probably have some of those issues. I've noticed also some of my texts don't get through to other subscribers on other networks, sometimes a little slowly.
Yeah.
Remember that... Google Fi is riding on Sprint and T-Mobile and U.S. Cellular and Wi-Fi on three different carriers in one additional data technique. So that's their secret sauce. They do offer, because they're on T-Mobile, free overseas data at a slow speed. But if you don't travel overseas, Verizon's the only thing against Verizon is it's not great for overseas travelers. But otherwise, and if Verizon's good in your neck of the woods... Maybe you should change.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you another question, though.
Sure.
If I go to Verizon, I'm not going to, even if I've got a Google phone, a Pixel or whatever, I'm not going to get the updates that I would have if I stayed with Google Fi, because Google pushes the updates out quicker, correct?
Yeah, and Verizon has said they've gone back and forth over what they're going to do about updates. You really want those monthly security updates. But because you're on a Pixel, you're right. You're not getting it from Fi anymore. You're getting it from Verizon. And I've seen Verizon block updates in the past. Usually they do that because they want to make sure it'll work with their hardware and the software modifications that they've made to that phone. In your case, of course, you'll be using your Pixel 2, so you won't have any issues with compatibility. Let me see what you got to do is ask them is what is your policy for updating the Pixel phone. I can't think of any reason why they would slow it down because it is the same phone that Google was updating on Fi right away. Let me see. I'm looking at an article. This is from last year. Verizon promises Google Pixel will get updates immediately. Verizon will not stand in the way of, here's the weasel words, any major updates.
Well, so they decide what's major.
Yeah. The reason this is also a little bit arcane. It has to do with who pays for the bandwidth for these updates. If you've got a million phones and you're going to push out a 50 megabyte update, if it's a small update, Verizon pays for it. If it's a big update, Google pays for it. So that's where that major updates clause comes from is Verizon's not promising, hey, if we have to pay for it, we may. And the truth is, though, the one you want most is the monthly, and it's a small one. It's usually 50 megs thereabouts, security update. And that's the one you really care about. You don't care about 8.1 versus 8.0 or 7.0. You care about the monthly security updates. I think you're going to get all the updates automatically. There's no reason for Verizon to hold back on it except for the cost of the bandwidth on their network. So I wouldn't worry about that. Yes.
One last question. It was actually the most important that I was calling you for, but I left it for last. I purchased from a secondary party
a Google Pixel. And the reason the guy got rid of it, he said he took a flight to Michigan.
Hold on, I got to take a break. Hang on, I'll continue this conversation during the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. Sorry about that. I had to take a break. Go ahead. So you got it from a guy. Said he had a problem.
I got it from a guy, and he's a trustworthy guy. He's a businessman. He's not a, you know, some scammer that's ripping off phones or anything. But he said he his phone was working perfect. He took a flight, got off the phone, off the plane in Michigan, I think it was, and it said no service, no SIM card. And this was a Google phone that he was with, I think, T-Mobile. And since then, he's tried to restart the phone, get it going again. It does not recognize its own IMEI number. And I've talked to a couple different tech supports. Nobody seems to understand how you could get an IMEI number back onto a phone.
Is this your phone or his phone?
Well, it's one I bought from him.
Okay.
It was a good price. But so, if I can't get it to work,
so
I'm
when,
screwed.
Yeah, when you go to the about this phone and you don't see an IMEI number at all?
Nope. And then there's also a phone number you can dial that's supposed to bring up the IMEI number. Doesn't have it.
So what do you see in that section where you would
nothing.
See? You don't see
nothing.
Where it says about phone. I guess it's under status. You see IMEI information. You don't see anything?
It's blank.
The whole page is blank?
Right. And then they've said that you can do this thing where you hit pound.
Yeah. That's
0660.
Yeah, that's the diagnostic.
Anything either.
Yeah, that's calling the phone company. Really what you care about is what the hardware shows. So you don't get a page. You just get a blank page there.
Correct.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, and I mean it's.
I think
it's
the phone is. I think what you should do is you need to contact Google. My suspicion is there's something wrong with the phone. Obviously, it will not work if you put a SIM card in. If there's no IMEI in there, it won't work. So
I've got myself as a little Wi-Fi tablet by using the phone now.
Yeah, so. you got to call Google and say, hey, what's going on? And they may have a simple firmware update they can push you. They may say, well, you're going to have to send it in. But the phone has failed. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because you're not the first party buyer, I don't know what kind of warranty service you're going to get from them. But I would definitely.
There's no warranty on that phone anymore.
Yeah, no, you need to call them. And hope that they have some simple fix because, they may want to stand behind the phone. It is, after all, a Google phone. They may say, yeah, well, that's something wrong with it. It's not like they have a store, unfortunately, you can walk into.
No, that's the bad thing with dealing with Google is you're pretty much either website or you call tech support, but they don't seem to, they've never even heard of this happening, they said.
Well, yeah, they're wrong on that. It happens. But I think it's a hardware failure if you don't.
Yeah.
How to repair Google Pixel IMEI problem. Common issue. IMEI needs repaired. Same situation. So, have you done a software update? You
can't do a software update because you can't get it to go.
Got it.
I've done a reset through the phone, and then I've done the hard reset where you got to push extra buttons to get in and out and everything, and neither one will bring anything up.
So I'm looking, this might be one for the XDADevelopers.com. I would first call Google. If they say it's not under warranty, we can't fix it. If they say, I don't know what you're talking about, say, I need to talk to somebody else. If there is a XDA Developers has a program called Restorer, EFS Restorer Express, that claims it could do this. But I wouldn't, it'll definitely violate your warranty. So only do it if Google gives you no satisfaction, I guess is the answer. Gotta run. Danny, Echo Park, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Danny.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm a graphic designer and illustrator. I use a Wacom Cintiq 13-inch.
Oh, nice. Very fancy.
Yeah, they're really awesome until you have to figure out how to run two screens with a MacBook Pro. So it's time to get a new MacBook Pro. Mine's from late 2011. It's got one HDMI port that's Thunderbolt port. And basically, all I'm trying to do is run my Wacom with an external monitor. And that does not seem possible. And it seems like a simple question to figure out online, but everybody argues about this same situation with that particular.
So the Cintiq is a very special monitor from Wacom that has the built-in digitizing in the monitor. And you have a Mac laptop. You've got it connected to an external monitor. That's the Cintiq. Is that correct?
The Cintiq is like a tablet and monitor.
Yeah, yeah. And the laptop is connected to the Cintiq. You have a Mac laptop?
Yeah.
And you're
so there's two connections. There's the USB and FireWire or HDMI that the Wacom uses. One for the screen portion and one for the illustration.
Yeah, because it has to convince the Mac, which knows nothing about touchscreens, that you're using a Wacom tablet. That's via USB. But from your point of view, you're drawing on the screen. It's nice. It's like a touch screen. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you want to do? You want to have another monitor coming off of that Mac and have
that's
the
Cintiq. Inch.
You want to have the
Cintiq? Yeah, now Wacom's a 13-inch. It's smaller. It's good for illustration. But as far as just using for a monitor, well, I have an external monitor that I can't run simultaneously with the Wacom because there's only one Thunderbolt on that particular MacBook Pro. Now, what's typically you would be able to daisy chain it, right? But because this Wacom has you have to use USB as well, I'm not sure how to daisy chain it and have
you need,
it
you need a th- you need, so which what year MacBook Pro do you have? Is it a touch bar?
It's late 2011.
It's not a touch bar. It's an older one. So that Thunderbolt port coming off of that, first of all, it's not Thunderbolt. It's probably Mini Display Port. It looks like a Thunderbolt to you, like a Thunderbolt 2 port, but it's not. It's a Mini Display Port.
From the MacBook?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they had Thunderbolt in 2011.
Yeah, it's a Thunderbolt.
You sure it is?
Yeah, I think it was the second year that they had it.
Okay. If it's Thunderbolt, then all you need is a dock. Thunderbolt's just like USB. If you had a USB hub, you could have multiple USB devices connected into it, right? So if you had a Thunderbolt dock, you connect that it's got to be Thunderbolt 2, which looks like Mini Display Ports. So you're going to have a dock that's a Thunderbolt 2 dock. You should be able to drive two monitors off of it. I think, you know, really there's two factors involved here. One, you have to have the video card has to have enough video memory to drive two monitors. I think it probably does. The USB is not an issue. From the Mac's point of view, you have a monitor connected to it and a Wacom tablet separately connected to the USB port. It doesn't understand that they're two together. That's why they give you two ports. So it drives the monitor as a monitor, and it thinks you have a separate Wacom tablet. So that's not in the way at all. If your Mac can have two monitors, then you can drive two monitors. So you just have to look up on that particular model of Mac how many monitors it can drive, how big those monitors can be, and then how you would connect them. If it only has one external monitor port, which sounds right, and you're sure it's Thunderbolt 2, part of the confusion is the Thunderbolt 2 port looks exactly like a Mini Display port. So you have to check the specs on that. If you're sure it's Thunderbolt 2, you should be able to connect to a Thunderbolt 2 dock that has its own external ports for two monitors. Connect both those monitors, continue to connect via USB. The Wacom Cintiq should work fine, and the other monitor should work fine, and you'll have the best of both worlds. Pretty sure that will work for you. I'd have to look up the specs on that 2011 Mac, though, to make sure that it can support those. I guess it could. 2011 wasn't that long ago, only 6 years ago. Whack 'em if you've got them, they said. Tom in San Jose, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Liam.
Welcome.
Thank you for my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
About the Amazon Echo Dot, I heard a conversation earlier, and it reminded me of a situation that I got four or five of them around the house. I have one in the box. Put it in the car. Is that possible?
Yeah, it's not desirable. And here's the problem. Actually, Amazon makes something called the Tap. I think they thought would go in the car because it has a battery. Here's the problem. Every time you turn off the car, the power goes out to the dot. Right?
Right.
And so it does. It, every time you start the car, the dot has to reboot. Then it has to find your internet access. Are you going to connect, pair it to a phone or something like that?
Yeah, I could.
It needs internet access. The dot needs to be on. The dot only knows from Wi-Fi. So you're going to need to have internet access via Wi-Fi. That means turning your phone into a hotspot or bringing a Wi-Fi card or something.
That's what I thought. I don't have a hotspot on the phone. Yeah.
So there's a newer device that might be the right device for you. It's a little more expensive than the dot. It's from a company called Anker, A-N-K-E-R. It's called the Rove, R-O-A-V. Viva. Viva la différence. It is an Amazon Echo device that plugs into your cigarette lighter. It will pair to your phone via Bluetooth. And then you put your phone on the speakers. Do you have Bluetooth in your car for your phone?
Yeah, I do.
Audio? And then so the audio for the Amazon Echo will come through your phone into the speakers. It's actually quite clever. It has its own software, the Roav Viva software, that will let you do maps, so you can actually say to your Amazon Echo, Echo, navigate somewhere, and it will actually do the voice navigation for you. You can have it play music, listen to anything you could do on a dot, you can have it do. But it's designed to be, as the dot is not, nor the, frankly, the Echo Tap is not, in a car. So I guess it understands about booting and rebooting.
Yeah.
I've been using that. A Roav Viva.
Yeah, okay. I'll look that up.
Yeah, $50.
One of those little hockey puck speakers that are in the car on a cigarette lighter adapter thing, and if I play music through my phone, it sounds much better. I just was hoping the Echo Dot would have that same capability, but sounds like it's not.
Yeah, it does do Bluetooth, so you can have it play through those speakers, yes. But I think the real problem with getting the dot to work is, A, you need internet access, and B, mm-hmm. you have to reboot it every time you turn on the car. It's going to boot up.
Yeah, the wireless speaker is the same way, too. It dies half the time.
We're starting to see, though, this Viva is just the beginning. There are going to be many, many devices for your car with Echo built in. In fact,
I know. We're just crawling. We haven't learned to walk.
It's just beginning. Yeah, well, Ford's now using Echo in its cars and all sorts of. So there's going to be a lot of these. Coming soon.
Yeah, we're going to look back and laugh at these days.
I know.
all these wires and things we got,
Right. If you have an always-on cigarette lighter port, some cars do, then it's a little more reasonable. Then you'd have a cigarette lighter go to the charger for, and it needs 5 volts, so I think it'll be all right. I think it, actually, check what the voltage is, but I think the 12 volts you're getting from the car should be enough for the dot. To keep it powered.
Yeah, I've got a USB and a cigarette thing. It should be.
Most of those cigarette lighter adapters will turn off when the car turns off. If you could find one that stays on in your car, some cars do have those, then it can keep it on, but there's always the risk of draining the battery because the dot will stay on. I think you'd be better off with the Viva. The Viva seems to work quite well. I've paired it to my phone, and you can say, Echo, play some music, and it will. Garmin has one now. I see camera dash cams. There's going to be quite a few of them. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look who's next. Dick DiBartolo, man's maddest writer. Stay here. Okay, so this 2011 Mac is USB 2. If it's a 15, it can do 2 monitors. It is Thunderbolt. So that is a Thunderbolt 2 port. So you need a Thunderbolt 2 dock. Thunderbolt 2, could you daisy chain Thunderbolt 2? See, I guess the Cintiq. Let's see. You could. There might be a Thunderbolt 2 splitter. Or a hub. Let's look for a hub. Really, that's what a dock is. Yeah, there's a number of Thunderbolt 2 docks. That's probably the best solution. And actually, that'd be a great solution anyway, because you sit down at your... Yeah, this article's from 2015, but I think it would still apply. Belkin, Elgato. I have an Otherworld Computing Thunderbolt 3 dock, which I like a lot. They're expensive, $200. Mophie, looks like Mophie makes one for $125. Oh, no, that's something else. Sonnet, StarTech, Canex, Akitio. Let's look at this one. Yeah, I own this. So that has two, yeah, so that's exactly what you want. So if you look in the back of this, you'll see it has that HDMI port, which you want, but it also has another Thunderbolt 2 port, so you could power a Thunderbolt monitor like the Apple Cinema Display with that. You could actually have, I don't know if the Mac could support it, you could have up to three monitors. I think the Mac will only support one. I mean, two monitors. So that's the way to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And sitting right across from me right now, Dick DiBartolo. He's Mad's maddest writer. We also call him the Gizwiz because he's always bringing us gizmos and gadgets. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, buddy?
Did you put on your disco shoes for us today?
I have them on 24/7.
I have a gadget for you. Look at this. Look at this. This is, I get this on Amazon. There's no electronics inside. It is a 52-ounce thermos mug called the Bubba.
The Bubba?
The Bubba.
All right, so with your dietary restrictions, what's in it?
Water, of course. What, vodka. 52 ounces of vodka. No, it's water.
Now, there you go.
That's
you
Jackie go. Gleason. No, this is water. But this way... what do they say? Cool. This is a liter and a half. I think they said you're supposed to have 2 liters of water a day, right?
Yeah, I think they're changing their mind on that.
And it stays ice cold, and it even has, reasons...
That is good.
It has a beer opener on the handle, bottle opener.
Great, okay.
So I think it's really... It's designed for a frat boy, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, and then it has a little sealable lid and all that stuff. That's my gadget. What do you have for us?
All right, so my gadget, it's a very clever little gadget called Spare Tray. And Spare, they spell S-P-A-I-R, because it's for people who like to travel in the window seat on an airplane.
Oh, I do.
So it is a little tray that locks into the channel of where the window shade is. And then when you fold it down, you have a 4-inch wide, 12-inch long little tray that has some really handy dandy.
So it's like you're you're at the drive-in. Those trays you put on the window in the drive-in.
That is exactly right. That's exactly right.
The only people of a certain age would even know what we're talking about here, Dick, because I think that they don't have drive-ins anymore, do they? I don't think so. Yeah. All right.
Probably not.
Drive-in? What's he talking about, Daddy?
Exactly. So if you have a cramped seat, you have a place to put a drink. There are two little holes at the end that you can slide down and put your eyeglasses in, sunglasses in one end, eyeglasses in the other end.
Is this going to fit every window? Aren't windows different?
You know what? I tried it on two different windows on two different planes. It fit fine. The guy said it fits on 90% of all aircraft that they tested it on. And the no stick 'em stuff is pretty good because you can put a drink on it, and then if the plane is tilting around, it holds it in place.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I tried it in the bathroom with a cup of water, and only until the cup of water gets heavy enough to fall off it. but it doesn't
slide.
So
it's good for empty cups is what you're saying.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, what I'm saying is that it won't slide off. The weight has to be heavy enough for it then finally to fall off. It's $25. It's on Amazon. Comes with a little travel case with a pull string at the top. I think it's a clever idea if you travel and you always take the window seat and you want a little extra place to put things.
I do, except I need every square inch of space. I don't need a tray digging me in my side.
Well, you know what? Actually, when it's in the window, it's not in your side. It's more
over the arm, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's not so bad.
Yeah, you know, it actually varies by aircraft because they slide those seats around depending on how much room. But on the seat I tried it, the window I tried it on, there was plenty of room.
Oh, yeah. And I got, for the first time in my life, I was flying to Puerto Rico over the Christmas break, and I had an airplane with no window. There was a window in the row behind me.
That can happen.
Yeah. There was a window in the row ahead of me, but my row, I was looking at a wall.
Yes. Every once in a while, you get on a seat where you'll have two windows. And then someone behind you say, could I have one of those windows?
Can I have your spare tray? It's spare as in air, S-P-A-I-R, tray. But you know what? The easiest thing to do would be to go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z.biz. When you tell people your website, do they sometimes say .com?
You know, they used to, but now people, now that, you know, there's dot everything these days, they say,
it's not a big,
pretty much get it.
Used to be you'd say, you know, the website is techguy.tv, and they go, you mean techguy.tv.com, right? No.
Yes.
No, so there's no com in this. It's the opposite of com. Gizwiz.biz.
Correct.
Nothing.
and not even that extra dot.
There's not even a dot there. By the way, if you get there, you should play the What the Heck Is It game. I think you just have just a couple weeks left, right? It goes to the end of February.
You do, and the cover of the magazine you'll be playing for is up there. The final issue by the New York staff.
Now, see, they say on it, landmark final issue, and then in very, very fine print...
Yes, that was not a good idea.
See back cover for details. People are going to go freak out.
A lot of people did, so that's why under it I put this is the final issue by the New York Usual Gang of Idiots.
That's
Mad
the final
LA
issue.
Starts with
it's
the
last
issue.
Straw, although, Dick, you're still going to be there, right?
I'm
going to
be there.
Yeah, you're just not going to the office as often.
No, I still do, but they don't let me in.
There's somebody else in there now.
Exactly.
Great. You can get a chance to win a copy of a Mad autographed by this guy right here if you can identify a close-up shot of some strange-looking gizmo or guy. I feel like you're not showing us the whole thing. I feel like there's stuff, there's hidden stuff in this.
No, not really.
All right.
No. Yeah. There's not like a bag of parts under the table.
I wouldn't put it past you, Di Bartola. I wouldn't put it past you. You can hear his great podcast every week. He's got lots of gizmos and gadgets every week at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy.
Last call of the day is Ed in San Pedro. Hello, Ed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Appreciate your knowledge.
Thank
I've got
you.
A really low-tech question for
good.
You.
Good. I only have 2 minutes. I should be able to answer it then.
Okay. Well, I've got kids that have the high-tech answers, but I need an AM/FM radio, the stereo, that will have a CD player, and it has to drive the two hardwired speakers in my garage. And I need a dial to dial with it. It needs to have a dial that I can turn.
You like big weighted dials that you can spin, right?
Yeah, I do. I don't like the presets that much.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not sure if they have it or not, but first place I would start, and we've been trying to get these guys as a sponsor for as long as I've done this show. They've never done it, but I love them anyway. Bob Crane at C. Crane Radio. You've probably heard them on other shows. Bob, why don't you buy the tech? I plug your stuff all the time. ccrane.com. They're very good. They're probably the last great radio company, right? So what you may be putting together is a component system. In fact, you are, right? Because you've got your own speakers already or no?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so you want really just the middle part. And you want it to have a CD player in it as well.
Right.
That's the other place I might suggest, you know, somebody's saying garage sales. But AM is the tricky part. But it may be. Who is it that makes the Crosley folks? Remember Crosley Radios way back when?
Yes, I do.
It's not the same company, but they got the name, CrosleyRadio.com. They still make CD players, CD burners, turntables. They make analog, they call it analog sound for a digital generation. If C. Crane doesn't have it, check out C-R-O-S-L-E-Y, CrosleyRadio.com. There's a name from the past, huh? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thanks for joining me. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.